Yupi Tacloban, waiting to go on. Yupi Tacloban, our moderator there is Professor Irma Tan. Please come in.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. Ms. Coronel, you expressed in your speech that we are at the cusp of monumental changes in the media landscape, where practically everyone, with the aid of technology, can be capable of witnessing, and this to a certain extent can be overwhelming and can be abused. What then do you think are the necessary values and skills that the university should impart so that its graduates may live up to the demands of the times and at the same time be leading participants in social reformation and in building democracy?
Yes, thank you for that question. It is true that the internet provides us with such a deluge of information, and I think the thing that we should be teaching students is to be able to sort through that information critically, to assess the relative merits of various sources of information, to find information that is relevant and true. The other one is to be able to verify and corroborate information, not just to accept information uncritically.
And the third is also to be, you know, it's the thing with, it's the same values that we should have taught them, or I'm sure we have taught them when they're reading newspapers or television. You know, television can lie, newspapers can lie, and blogs and online video can lie as well. So there should be, I think, the critical thinking skills that we learn in universities, the skill to sort out the important from the merely interesting is another critical skill which you need, especially in an age where there is so much information all around. And the third is also, I think, is because we're teaching them not just to be consumers of news information, but also producers of news and information. So the values that the journalism school here has been teaching, the values of verification, fact-checking, multiple sourcing, getting things straight, getting various sides of an issue, that those same values should be taught not just to journalism students, but to other students, because other students will be out there publishing, broadcasting on the web.
Okay, thank you. Now we have UP Cebu. Professor Jesus Cinco is our moderator in UP Cebu. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. The current environment is characterized by general apathy and a high level of noise in both print and electronic media. Given this environment, it has become difficult for journalists to perform their role of acting as catalysts of change. While a multidisciplinary approach has been suggested by Professor Coronel to tackle this problem strategically, what measures or approaches are currently in place or intended to be implemented in the short term to allow journalists to remain effective in playing out this role?
Yes, that's a very interesting question, and it's a question that the news business all around the world is grappling with. I quoted earlier from the study done by the Associated Press. It was a study done by anthropologists who sat down with young news consumers over several months and observed their news consumption behaviors, you know, which is what anthropologists do. It's what zoologists do with animals, but you know, anthropologists do it with people. And what they found, I think, you know, it's a study that should be done in the Philippine context as well. What they found was that young people were consuming the news. They were reading news headlines, they were reading news stories, but they found news content shallow and repetitive. It was the same headline news, minute after minute, hour by hour. And that tired them. It exhausted them. They actually wanted deeper and richer content, which the news media was not providing. They wanted content that had context, that gave them a history, a background, that gave them a sense, that helped them get a much more profound understanding of what was going on in public life. Yet all they got, for the most part, was the inverted pyramid and a one-line headline. They wanted more. So I think the question that journalists should be facing is, what kind of rich and nuanced and in-depth content should we produce, and what is the manner of delivery? For example, they found in the AP study that because news was so tiresome, young people were actually tuning in to Jon Stewart to get a different take on the news. So humor as a way of getting people interested in public affairs is a good peg, and that's one way. The other way is using new media, you know, and using graphics and providing data that databases that readers, that internet users can use. So, for example, they would like to find out, you know, a story on crime would be accompanied by a database that says, you know, which neighborhoods have the highest rates of crime, what crime happened in their neighborhoods, what is the most, is it bag snatching, cell phone snatching, pocket buy, that's the most common in their neighborhoods. So this is what we mean when we say they want news they can use. They want news that is useful to them. So even as we give them a broad array of, you know, rising criminality, they also want to know what's happening in their neighborhoods, what streets they should avoid, how effective the police is there, and what the police is doing. So that, I think, is a way to engage people. The idea is to engage people for a longer period of time in the news, because now the level of engagement, as the study found out, is shallow. It's very shallow. You read the headline, you read the first part, you read the lead, and that's it. But you want them to engage. And the only way you can engage them is providing them more interesting and deeper and more layered content. So I think it's a combination of using new techniques, you know, video, audio, but also providing rich data, providing history like timelines as to the development of news, of current stories, providing them links to other background stories. And using the information that's already there. A lot of the things that journalists need to do is just to repurpose the content they already have in their news archives, for example, provide background and history to current events.
I think the older people are also watching Jon Stewart. Now we have the UP Open University. Our moderator there is Professor Alejo Espinosa. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. I'd like to read a question sent in over the web by one of our alumni, Zandro Padas. The question reads, in your opinion, how participatory can local youth agenda setting be? Is a local media ready and willing to pass the ball or teach journalism to ordinary people, people in the grassroots, so that any existing or would-be community newspaper might truly be by the people and for the people?
Okay, let me repeat that because it came in a little choppy. The question from UPOU is this. In your opinion, how participatory can the local news agenda setting be? Is the local media ready and willing to teach journalism to ordinary people, people in the grassroots, so that any existing or would-be community newspaper would truly be by the people and for the people?
I think it is in local or community journalism where the potential for more engaged citizen journalism can take place, because the issues are very local and people are deeply interested in what's happening in their own neighborhoods. It's much more difficult to get them interested in what's happening in Manila, but if it concerns, say, the water supply or criminality or flooding in the neighborhood, they will be more concerned. I think the community media has not, in this country, has not really kept pace with the technological developments and have not really used the interactivity that's already there. For example, mobile phones, websites, to be able to engage the readers more and to know from the readers what their concerns are. I think community media has been very, very good when there are natural disasters, for example, and they help out and they provide information. But to do that on a sustained basis when there is no news, as we define it, breaking out, but for issues that are more long-term, I think that's very important. But I think there's a great potential for interactivity, especially with community radio. With community papers, that's going to be much more difficult. But I think a lot of community radio programs are already doing these things. I think the question is they engage the citizens more as sources of news rather than as content producers themselves. they engage him as like, you know, this as a victim or as a protagonist, rather than someone also who can do the news themselves. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. UP Manila is ready. Our moderator there is Professor Cora Añonuevo. Come in, Manila.
And greetings from UP Manila. We have Professor Bernard Carganilla, who is the chair of the Department of Social Sciences, College of Arts and Sciences, and is columnist of the newspaper Malaya, who will ask the question.
Good afternoon, Sheila.
Good afternoon.
Agreed that there is a participatory revolution rolling across the world right now, but has the time come to sound the death knell for the campus press as alternative press? Students would rather read each other's blogs. But where is the passion for a free press? Would the absolute monarchy in Brunei, for example, allow a member of the Manila Collegian to embed himself in Bandar Seri Begawan and report on student life in that kingdom? Thank you.
The campus press as alternative press, I think it's still... It's a very live issue. You see, we've relied so long on the national press to tell us what is going on in this country, but therefore a lot of issues and concerns are really not reported. I think what is needed is to supplement reporting on national affairs with reporting on communities and on campuses. And I think campus newspapers can report on their communities as well as what's happening in the university. I think the campus newspapers can be the forum for dialogue within the university as a community, bringing various sectors together. I don't know how many. I saw that the Collegian was online, but it's still PDF versions of old issues. I didn't see much interactivity in the Philippine Collegian website. So this is fairly easy to do. It does not require a great amount of money. It just requires a few people doing the right programming and software. But I think the campus press could still be, in a sense, alternative newspaper for young people. And we have a lot of young people. And many campus newspapers actually have bigger circulation than some of the so-called national papers that we have, because, I don't know, what's the circulation of the Collegian? It's like 30, 40,000. That's bigger
Anybody
than a lot
from the
of
Collegian
the,
here?
The smaller newspapers. Anyway, what I'm saying is, yes, the campus press has a role to play, especially in getting young people engaged in community life, but that they also, it's ironic that campus newspapers being... serving an audience that is so attuned to the web have not really adjusted to the internet age as they should be.
I think the Collegian prints 15,000 copies every week.
Yes. I assure you that's bigger than the circulation of some Manila newspapers, and that's a huge audience with a great potential for engagement and interactivity.
Okay. Yeah. I've been requested to remind everybody to please turn off your cell phones. We are having some technical problems with transmission. Thank you. Now we have UP Baguio ready. Our moderator in Baguio is Professor Victoria Costina. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. How can we help journalism and communication students who are technologically savvy and yet have become less literate, increasingly unable to both read books especially and write as well as they should, especially in English, the medium that they're expected to use besides their own regional languages? Apologies to my student audience.
I don't know if it's any consolation, but that's a global problem. The decline in reading and writing skills is palpable throughout the world. And of course, there are many reasons for that, and some people blame internet and television for, you know, people used to read books more and used to write letters more instead of texting, and, you know, they used to write full sentences, they used to be able to spell. And those skills are not the valued skills in the internet era. This is a big debate, actually. Should we insist on the reading and writing skills of the analog era do we insist that they be perfected in the digital era, or should we develop a new form of digital literacy that is much more appropriate? Are we developing a new language, a new way of communication that does not follow the old rules? I'm not sure. I personally am a great believer in elegant language and grammar and proper spelling, and I find and I think it still has a role in, you know, in intellectual life, properly thinking and analyzing and putting your thoughts together in a coherent way instead of just putting random, unorganized thoughts on paper. I still think we need to develop the intellectual skills that writing requires. Writing is not just saying what's on your mind. It means thinking about language, thinking about structure, thinking about how to develop thoughts, thinking about, you know, writing is developing a thought. It's not randomly putting together random streams of thought that you happen to have at the right time. And I think this is one disadvantage of blogging, where people can basically blog without thinking and just put unedited thoughts together. But I am hoping eventually that, because there will be so much content on the internet, that eventually people will veer towards content that is, you know, much more beautifully presented, that's more, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. It's a new generation, and maybe we have to rethink the meaning of writing and reading literacy for this new generation. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Now we have UP Los Baños. Our moderator is Professor Aldo Lim. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good afternoon, Ms. Cornell. Thank you for your wonderful talk. Sitting beside me is Angela Minya. She's a BS Development Communication student, and she will address your question.
Good afternoon, ma'am. You were emphasizing on the use of the internet for information dissemination. Would you say that nowadays we could consider the web as a more important and more persuasive form than the offline materials that we have, like newspapers?
Okay, I will repeat the question because it came in a bit choppy. You are emphasizing the use of the internet for information dissemination. Would you say that nowadays we could consider the web as a more important and more persuasive form than offline materials such as newspapers?
I believe that we newspapers inhabit a media ecology. The internet is part of that ecology. There's room there for newspapers, for radio, for television, and for the web. And all of them together create an information sphere, and that this does not make newspapers useless, because reading newspapers on paper is still a different experience, because you can actually focus on one without looking at links and being distracted. It's still a much deeper experience than reading online. So I think we have an audience now that will go for different reading experiences, and each medium has particular strengths. And the internet has many strengths, but it has many weaknesses as well. So I think there is room for newspapers, but increasingly young people will be going to the web. That will be the main platform for news for young people.
Okay, thank you very
much. Maybe older people will stick to newspapers.
Thank you. We are also getting the questions via Skype for the information of those who are wondering how we're able to get the questions here. Our next campus is, we're coming back to Diliman. Okay, there was a gentleman who wanted to ask a question. Yes, please.
My name is Chris Lacaba. It's a follow-up to that last statement. Given that there's space for both newspapers, television, and the internet to coexist, how will they now differentiate? How they play against each other? How will they complement each other? What role will each medium play?
Okay. Yes, I think you will have, you know, new. One is generational. There will be generational preferences for certain types of news platforms. I think young people will prefer the web, and mobile phones will prefer to get their news from. The other one is class and language. In the Philippines, for example, newspapers are all in English. So you will have your English-speaking urban middle class and your political class reading newspapers. And I think and we see that in other countries as well, where newspapers will increasingly no longer be mass circulation, but will increasingly be the news organs for your middle class and your political elites. The internet and television and radio will continue to have a mass audience. In the Philippines, I think the accustomed, whatever, standard is newspapers are in English, radio and television are in Tagalog. So you actually, you have different classes of people using different types of media platforms. I'm not sure this is good because I'm not sure you can continue having a national conversation if different classes of people rely on different types of news platforms for the news and information, but that is what is going to happen. It's going to happen on the web as well, where you have increased niching. So people just interested in fencing or surfing, just reading fencing or surfing sites, it will be difficult to aggregate those voices. But at the same time, that will create the need for certain news organizations to act as aggregators, to tell you what is going on elsewhere in the web because you don't have the time to read everything else. So there will be an additional function for journalists, no longer just reporting on the news, but also aggregating and putting together information because people simply do not have time. I said a while ago that the internet is a link economy. It is also an attention economy because there's so many websites and so little time. No one can possibly look at all that content. So an emerging form of journalism now is summarizing, aggregating, and picking out what is relevant to users. So there will be different uses. I think the internet will be very good for the aggregation function because of the links capacity. Because you can link to news stories and people, if they are interested, can go there. You do not have that link capacity for newspapers. Newspapers will increasingly be the home of more in-depth, longer, and more sophisticated content, I think, or should be, because your audience is for breaking news and for, you know, more lighter content will go to the web and to television.
Okay. Our next question is from UP Iloilo. Our moderator is Dr. Belia Grace Barrera. Go ahead, Iloilo.
Good afternoon. The question is from Mr. Hannibal Kamua, faculty member of the Division of Social Sciences, College of Arts and Sciences. You referred to the vital role media played in Philippine politics, especially in ousting tyrannical and corrupt leaders. But how do we address the problem of media being used as a propaganda tool for corrupt politicians who wish to remain in power? Now that media has evolved into something which has a limitless audience reach, an audience that has no access to the web.
Okay, that's a very good question. I think in a way, the internet can potentially act as a check on the control of information by people who pay off journalists or own newspapers or TV stations. Because anyone can now publish on the web. You don't have to be a Lopez or a Prieto to put out, you know, to have your voice out there. So that acts as a check against entrenched elites who happen to own or have a monopoly of the ownership of mainstream media. But I agree that content is currently not now filtering to ordinary people. But that is why I am hoping that mobile phones, which most Filipinos generally have access to, can be a new way of accessing information. There's now developing ways to get radio, for example, on your mobile phone, and you don't need to own a radio station to do that. Like, you can get radio, beam it through digitally through the internet, and use your mobile phone to get radio broadcasts, and that provides, you know, room for more voices, more independent voices, and hopefully voices that are not paid to, you know, not their master's voice, but really voices that reflect, you know, believe in fostering civic responsibility in civic and public life. Technology allows us the means to do these things, but unless, you know, it will not do it automatically. We need also to create a community of journalists, a community of news content producers, and an audience for these things. So it will not come about automatically just because we have the technology. What we need is to train people to be able to use that technology and to produce that content to reach the audience we want to reach. Yeah.
Okay. We're coming back here into Diliman again, and we have time for two questions. Who wants to take those two questions? Yes.
Hi, good afternoon, Bianca Consuli. Considering that the practice of journalism isn't a strictly professionalized one, even an organized level here or anywhere, in the sense that we don't have licenses, etc., how do you think can citizen journalism be improved to reach a certain standard of responsible communication? Or is it even possible to be able to control the content or at least standardize it somehow?
You're right. I mean, the problem with citizen journalism is you get all sorts of content, and a lot of it is really not to the standards of professional journalism. One way to do it is, you know, you train citizen journalists as well, and this is what they're doing in Korea, where, you know, the pioneering citizen website Oh My News has actually set up a school for citizen journalists. I think the history of any medium, for example, when newspapers first came out, they were the work of amateurs. But increasingly, you know, as the audience matures, then you'll have increasingly more and more professional content, and your audience tends to go to where there is more professional content. Will that happen with citizen journalism? I'm guessing that it is, because we're in the U.S., for example, where there have been many more experiments in citizen journalism for a far longer period of time, you actually have citizen journalist sites now that have a mix of both professional and non-professional journalists working together, and the quality is competitive to the quality of mainstream media. So over time, I'm hoping that the quality of citizen-produced content and citizen-produced sites will improve. But again, that requires the cooperation of an entire community. You also need an audience that appreciates quality. So it's the synergy that we need to bring that about.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Perhaps in the College of Mass Comm, it's time to propose a new GE course, Citizen Journalism. All right, we have time for just one more question. Yes, please.
I'm Belia Lucas. I'm with the UP Center for Integrative and Development Studies. Professor Sheila mentioned earlier that media in the Philippines is more focused on toppling regimes than in reforming new ones. But in the case of the current regime, you have not toppled nor reformed it. I'm not yet done. Is this an indication of the strength of this government or on the waning power of media? Thank you.
Maybe it's both. Maybe it's both. I have not lived in this country for the last 2 years, so I don't really follow politics day to day. But yes, this regime is really very strong, and I think also, but you know, those are not the only two players. There's the larger society. There's the public as well, and the public is, I think, in this, you know, you're talking about media and political regimes. The public is actually the one that shifts the balance in the end. Power belongs to the people, not to the government or the media.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And once again, we'd like to thank our centennial lecturer, Professor Sheila Coronel.
Thank you.